recite the first and second verses of the Gita, third chapter, and then the verses. The verses are simple, so let us try to recite them together. Arjuna Vacha.
Arjuna Vacha.
Together. Vyamishrineva Vakena. Okay, I think you have difficulty. Follow me. Arjuna Vacha.
Arjuna Vacha.
Vyamishrineva Vakena. Dhirmohya Sivame. Ekambadanishchitya Yena Shreyoham Apnuyan. Sorry, some mistake? So, okay. So, there's two verses are together. Yamishrine Vakena Buddhir Mohya Sivame. Or a third line? Okay, so, sorry. What is Krishna telling or Arjuna is telling? That you have spoken confusing words. So, I think I recited 3.2, isn't it? So, let's recite 3.1. Jayasi, is that one?
Yeah.
Jayasi chet karmanaste.
Jayasi chet karmanaste.
Matta buddhir janardana.
Matta buddhir janardana.
Tatkim karmani ghore maam.
Tatkim karmani ghore maam.
Yojayasi keshava.
Yojayasi keshava.
So, I bring the translations, first and second verse.
Arjuna said, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare? If you think that intelligence is better than fruitful work, my intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for you.
Sometimes, you know, after a class, somebody asks a question and we don't understand the question only. We don't understand any answer. So sometimes in the Bhagavad Gita, it happens like that. Because intelligence is superior to work, then why are you engaging me in warfare? No. Intelligence, work, warfare. What is the correlation? You may wonder. But actually, in the second chapter, Krishna gives a summary of Gita. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur titles the second chapter as Contents of Gita Summarized. Prabhupada takes that title. So, the title in the Gita Press is Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya is talked about over there. But the Sankhya is not the only thing talked about over there. That's why Contents of the Gita Summarized is more representative of the actual content. So there, Krishna talks about multiple levels of action. Basically, Arjuna is thinking that I will renounce this world and go to the forest. So he's thinking of practicing Jnana Yoga, just going and doing impersonal meditation. Now, Krishna is telling Arjuna that you should practice Karma Yoga. Mm-hmm. And you should work with detachment. But Krishna also in the Bhagavad Gita talks about Karma Kanda in the second chapter. How by fighting you will go to heavens. See, by Karma Yoga, Karma Kanda, one attains heavens. By Karma Yoga, one attains liberation. And that liberation will depend whether it will be impersonal Brahman liberation, it will be Shantaras in Vaikuntha, or it will be Swarupa Siddhi in the spiritual world. It will depend on what is one's understanding of the Absolute. If it is Brahman, then one will attain liberation. If it is Paramatma, one will attain Shantaras. If it is Bhagavan, one will attain Swarupa Siddhi, whatever it is. So, now Krishna in the second chapter condenses Karma Kanda. Although he says Karma Kanda is taught in the Veda, he condemns it. Because it continues the cycle of birth and death. He says, okay, you go to heavens, but you will fall back again. So in 2.49, he has told Arjuna, Durenaya avaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Avaram karma. Inauspicious work. Avara is blessing. Avara is that which is not leading to blessing, that which is leading to sort of curse. So keep it away by buddhi, by intelligence. So now actually Krishna has talked about these three levels, Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Now Arjuna has not understood these three levels difference. So for him there are only two options, fighting or not fighting. So he thinks now below these three levels is Vikarma. Vikarma is non-scriptural action which leads to sinful reactions. So now Arjuna is thinking fighting is Vikarma and not fighting is the only other alternative. So now when Krishna condemns avaram karma, give up inauspicious work, So Arjuna is thinking that I should give a fight. And for him, there are no, these three intricate options are not clear. He says, if I am not fighting, then what am I doing? I am going to the forest. So he says, so with buddhi, I should go to the forest. If I fight, it is avaram karma. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, Arjuna is telling Krishna, Krishna, you said, jayasi chet karmanaste matta buddhir janardana. You said buddhi is better than karma. Buddhi is better than karma. And he thinks, by buddhi I should become inactive, by karma I will become active and get bad karma. Therefore, if buddhi is better than karma, then why are you telling me to fight? Tat kim karmani ghore maam. So, now there is what is called a semantic confusion. Semantic means with respect to meanings. So, Arjuna is thinking ghora karma as fighting against his relatives. Krishna is telling avaram karma as just doing futile activity and continue on the cycle of birth and death. So the same sort of words are used, but people arrive, we arrive at different meanings. That's why, you know, when we give classes, we have to be very careful of what we emphasize. Because it is said when the speaker speaks, the audience carries only 20% back with them. And God only knows which 20% they will carry. So, that's why it's good to emphasize the important points repeatedly and in different ways so that people are clear about what we want to say. So, tatkim karmani ghore ma niyojasi keshava. Why are you engaging me, Keshava, in this ghora karma? Now, another reason why Arjuna gets bewildered is that towards the end of the second chapter, the word shanti comes several times. Now in 2.70, apuryamanam achala pratishtam. That verse, sa shanti maapnoti na kama kami. And then again 2.71, vihaya kama niha sarvan kumam sharat nispruha nirvamo nirahankara sa shanti madigachya. So twice the word shanti kama. So now Krishna is talking of an internal shanti that comes by living in harmony with God. Whereas Arjuna is thinking of external shanti that comes by not fighting. So the word is shanti only, but there are very different meanings which Krishna is intending to give and which Arjuna is understanding. So he's thinking, as a self-realized soul, the sita pragya will attain shanti. He says, yes, if you don't fight, you will attain shanti. Krishna is talking about something else entirely. So therefore, what happens? He says, okay, if you are telling me that such a self-realized person attains shanti, but then why are you telling me to become a shanta by fighting? Therefore he says, Vyamishrineva Vakyena. He says, so what happens, you know, if you give a whole class, but the analysis is how we should chant attentively, and then suddenly at the end of the class, therefore you should all go out and preach. The whole class was chanting, then it appears, you know, should we emphasize the chanting or should we go out and preach? So Vyamishrineva Vakyena, Mishra Vakyena. Your words are completely mixed. Buddhi Mohyasiva Me. My intelligence is bewildered. She says, Tadekam Vadanishchita. Therefore tell me what is one thing I should do. Yena Shreyoham Apnaya. So all of us know about Shreya and Preya. She says, I'm not interested in short term gains. I'm interested in long term gains. Tell me one thing which I should do by which I will attain a long term gain. Now the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and fifth chapter have many parallels. In fact, fifth chapter will also start with a similar question. Still Arjuna is not very clear, even at the end of third and fourth chapters, what exactly you should do. Because again Krishna uses the words like shanti and at the end of the fourth chapter. And then suddenly at the towards the end of the fourth chapter he uses the word shanti. And then at the last verse of the fourth chapter he says, now with the sword of knowledge you should fight. So again Arjuna gets bewildered. Again he asks a similar question. But Krishna takes the same concepts in the fifth chapter. So now Krishna will make things more analytically clear. So he starts the third verse by describing that there are two levels which I talked about. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Lokesmin Vividha Nishtha Pura Prokta Mayanagha Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam.
God had said, who both Indians Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophers like religion, and others by knowledge.
Yeah. So, there are two levels. So now, interestingly, Krishna uses the word nishtha. Generally, we translate nishtha as faith. But there are two, Prabhupada translates that nishtha as level. Because our faith determines our level. And the Vedic culture recognizes that we cannot have one path for everybody. Because different people have different levels of faith. And so therefore, according to the level of faith of a person is given a path. For example, somebody who has a lot of faith in material enjoyment, the here and now, I can see this world, I can see you become wealthy. If you are poor, then you have to travel and travel and look. If you are wealthy, you can drive on your own Mercedes Benz. Life becomes better. So people have a lot of faith in the here and now. For them, if you talk about transcendental life, oh, you can go to a spiritual world and you will be happy over there. They don't have the faith to develop that. And we see in our own preaching also, in the initial stages, we will talk about the practical benefits of Krishna consciousness, how your mind will become peaceful, we'll gain more self-mastery, how mantra meditation helps us for practical needs. Of course, material life ultimately is unpractical, impractical, because we grow old, get diseased and die, and very impractical living with a sickly and a dying body. But according to people's level of faith, initially, people are told karma kanda because people are interested in materialistic benefits. So, yes, religion will often be there. So, Krishna talks about these two levels, karma yoga and jnana yoga. Lokesmi vividhanishtha. These two levels I have talked about pura earlier. So, this earlier refers to 2.39. 2.39 he said, Esha te bhita sankhe buddhi yoge tvimam shunu buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandhan prahasyasi. So he says that, oh Arjuna, I have spoken to you about Sankhya Yoga. And now I will tell you how to apply this Sankhya Yoga so that you can attain liberation. So one is to understand that I am not the body, I am the soul. And to analyze that and to become detached. But it is quite difficult. Because I just at an intellectual level, if I understand I am not the body, I am not the body. Okay, I am not the body, but what should I do? I cannot think throughout my life I am not the body. I have to do something practical. Therefore, Jnana Yoga is very strongly discouraged throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Although the Bhagavad Gita is itself Jnana, but Jnana and Jnana Yoga are a different process. Jnana Yoga means just living at the intellectual level and analyzing and rejecting the material world. It's not this, not this, not this, not this. It's very impractical. So Krishna is, really, I have spoken about these two things. What have I spoken? Jnana Yogena Sankhya. Sankhya means Sankhya, to count. So the Sankhya philosophers, they count the number of material elements in material existence. And they say, okay, I am not earth, I am not water, I am not fire, I am not air. And like that they go on. Ultimately, who am I? Aham Brahmasmi. Ultimately they come to that. So this analysis is one level. And Karma Yogena Yogina. And there are others who practice Karma Yoga. They understand I am not the body, therefore I should not be attached to the fruits of the work that I do with my body. That is Karma Yoga. Now, Krishna in the next few verses will talk about how Karma Yoga is superior to Jnana Yoga. Although in the hierarchy, Jnana Yoga is superior to Karma Yoga. Why is Jnana Yoga superior? Because Jnana Yoga, when a person is practicing Jnana Yoga, is at a higher level of detachment. But from a practical point of view, for Arjuna and for most of us to practice, Karma Yoga is easier to practice. So then he will describe in the next verses how this is so. Na karmanam anarambhan.
Na karmanam anarambhan.
Naishkarmyam purushosnute.
Naishkarmyam purushosnute.
Na cha sanyasanat eva.
Na cha sanyasanat eva.
Siddhin samadhi gacchati.
Siddhin samadhi gacchati.
So, Krishna is talking about two different points over here. Both of them are related to Jnana Yoga. He says, Na karmanam anarambhan. Arambha means to begin. Anarambha means to not begin. So somebody says, I'll not begin the activity. Naishkarmyam purushosnute. So naishkarmya is actually free. So in the Sanskrit there are two words, akarma and naishkarmya. So akarma can mean inactivity, or akarma can mean activity which does not lead to any reaction. Inaction or action does not lead to any reaction. But akarma can have this confusion. So therefore the other word is naishkarmya. Naishkarmya means freedom from the action. So it is not Arjuna just by giving up activity that you will become free from reaction. Because Arjuna's fear is that if I fight in this war, I'll be doing karma. And because it is bad karma, there will be bad reactions to that. So, you know, many times when we study the Bhagavad Gita, when we quote verses from the Gita, Bhagavad Gita is very simple. Patram pushpam phalam sarvadharman paritidachya. But actually if we study the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse, we understand it's quite technical. So many levels Krishna is talking about. And what is Krishna doing? Because Krishna is not just giving some pragmatic instructions to Arjuna to make him fight. Actually, Krishna is giving the whole Vedic philosophy, summarizing it, analyzing it, and categorizing it according to hierarchy. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita is Sarvopnishado Gao Dugna Gopalanjana. Upnishads are like a cow and the Bhagavad Gita is like the milk. So Krishna is going to summarize, analyze, and categorize. And that's why it's technical. When we go into the verse by verse systematic analysis of the Bhagavad Gita. Summarize means he'll briefly describe what is Jnana Yoga, what is Karma Yoga, what is Karma Kanda. And then after that he will analyze what does this involve. And then we'll categorize where does this fall in the hierarchy. And then he will establish how at the end of the Bhagavad Gita Krishna does two things. Yes, in the spiritual path we need to know two things, the sadhya and the sadhana. Sadhya is the goal. What is it that I should achieve? And the sadhana is the means. Now Vedic culture has many sadhyas and many sadhanas. Yes, for somebody a sadhya might be, yes, I want to worship Shiva by chanting Om Namo Shiva. And some of the sadhana may be, okay, I want to perform Ashtam Yoga. So Krishna talks about the various sadhyas and various sadhanas. And he shows how pure devotional service is the highest sadhana and the highest sadhya is he, Krishna himself. So for that purpose he does a lot of technical and intricate analysis. And that's why the Bhagavad Gita is very demanding when we start studying it systematically. So here Krishna will tell that the two aspects of Jnana Yoga is, the whole principle of Jnana Yoga is that actually if you do karma you become bound because you are acting at the bodily level and you will have to get bodily reactions. Their idea is become inactive. He says, it's not so simple. Then na karmana manarambha naishkarmyam purushosite. Just don't start any activity and you become free from the action. Why? Because the senses will be active. The mind will be active. The senses may not be physically active, but internally they are contemplating. They are rearing to go. They are longing to act. So, and second thing, nacha sanyasana deva siddhin samadhi gacchati. Sannyas is important in the Vedic culture. In Varanashram Dharva, sannyas is the highest ashram. But it is not that by sannyas one attains siddhi, one attains perfection. Sannyas is actually a means for purification. Sannyas itself is not purification. When a person has purified the gross sensual urges, then when he takes sannyas to focus himself entirely on purification. But it is not that sannyas itself automatically brings purification or liberation. So, we'll discuss this theme. Sometimes the Bhagavad Gita appears to discourage renunciation. But the Bhagavad Gita is discouraging not devotional renunciation. It is discouraging Jnana Yoga renunciation. And we'll discuss that difference a little later. But, nacha sanyasana deva siddhim samadhi gacchati. Once a husband and a wife had a quarrel. So the husband told his wife, if you don't behave properly, then I'll take sannyas. I'll go. The wife told the husband, don't spoil the sannyas ashram.
So, you know, frustration in material life is not the qualification for sannyas. So one has to have dedication, purification. So sometimes, this is a typical, if I just get frustrated in material life, I take sannyas.
Oh, that is not the way it is. And that is the idea, very common. Once a journalist had come to our temple, and
the journalist saw so many young people. So the question that the journalist asked was, oh, I didn't know so many people get frustrated in life.
So then I don't know, they are intelligent enough to start social life before they get frustrated. So people's idea is that, why do people, somebody likes culture?
Because he must be frustrated in material life. It's possibly a reason, as Krishna says, artho, jitgyan, it's one of the reasons. And surely it is one of the commonest reasons. But if that is the only reason why somebody comes to spirituality, then you will find spirituality can also be frustrated. There are a lot of frustrations in spirituality also. Because if we just think of spirituality as just renouncing work and doing nothing, then that can be boring. But spirituality has positive spiritual advancement and achievement, where you have to follow the principles, achieve sense control, and then do services for Krishna. You will meet frustrations in that, sure. So therefore, Krishna says, it is not just by sannyas you attain perfection. Srila Prabhupada, in the third chapter of the Madhya Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just speaks on sannyas. Now Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, because of his love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, does not have the heart to describe the sannyas leela in much detail. So he doesn't describe, he just describes how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sannyas, and after sannyas he is just travelling around. There Prabhupada explains, it is not so much the dress that is sannyas, it is the attitude of service that is sannyas. So actually whichever ashram one is in, first one develops a service attitude, attitude of dedicated service. And once one has developed the attitude of dedicated service, then to have greater facility to increase one's dedication to service, one can take to the renounced order. It is not that the renunciation like a magic wand which frees one from all material desires, all material attachments, and all problems of material existence. No. Then in the next verse, Krishna will tell, why is it that if you say I give up activity, then naturally I become inactive, then I will not be getting any karmic reaction. In the next verse, Krishna says, no, it's not so simple. Why? That he describes in the next verse. Nahi kaschit kshanam api. Jātu tiṣṭhatya karma kṛt. Kāryate yavaśa karma. Sarvam prakṛti jair guṇai. Translation.
Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something. Not even for a moment.
Yes. Nahi kashit shanam api. Shana is even for a moment. Jatu tishthati. Tishthati means to be situated in a karma. One cannot be inactive even for one moment. Why? Karyate. One is forced to act. Avasha. Helplessly. Sarva prakriti jair gunai. Prakriti jair means born of prakriti. The material modes which are born of prakriti force everyone to act. So, we know this verse later, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha, 3.27, this chapter later will come. So, there Krishna's emphasis is saying that don't think you are the doer, because Prakriti will force you to act. But here Krishna's force is, emphasis, don't think you can be the non-doer, because you will be forced to act. Don't think you can become inactive, because you will be forced to act. So now, many of us may not think, may not be able to immediately recognize how it is that material nature forces us to act. And at a gross level, material nature has a body which has its urges. You know, when we have to respond to nature, it's practically Sarvadharvan Parityaja. We just have to give up whatever we are doing. So material nature forces us to act. We cannot be inactive. But along with that also, these are the gross bodily urges. But there are subtler psychophysical urges which come. And somebody who is a Vaishya, who has a Vaishya mentality, money-making mentality, you just can't make him stop thinking of money. No matter what wherever he goes, think, okay, how can I earn money? How much this must be costing? How much this must be doing? So that's natural for him. And he cannot stop it. Similarly, somebody is an intellectual, he has to think and analyze. He cannot just, don't be so complicated, don't think so much. What will you do? He says, I have an intellect, I have to do something. You know, like that is an extreme example. But you know, Varanasura had 100 arms, and he went to Lord Shiva and he said, you know, I have 100 arms. I don't know what to do with this 100 arms. That's why sometimes I, you know, break mountains to powder and throw up the water from the river and create floods. But I want somebody to fight who will engage my 100 arms. So we may not have 100 arms physically, but you know, our psychophysical condition has more than 100 arms. So we want to do a lot of things, and therefore it's very difficult for us to be inactive. Now, of course, according to our psychophysical nature, we will be active in different ways. Like somebody has a sort of kshatriya nature, likes to manage. 3, 4, 5, okay, this, we have to do this, this, we have to do this, we have to do this, we have to do this. And you feel excited. Somebody, you know, doesn't have kshatriya nature. Why are you doing so much? You just calm down, please. Cool down, man. Don't do so many things. But it doesn't work like that. Everybody is forced to act. So, that's why I say sarva prakriti jayir gunai. That it's by the modes of material nature, we are forced to act. But now the Mahajnanis argue, yes, we are forced to act by material nature. But when you become free from the effects of material nature, then you will not be forced to act. Therefore, as you come to goodness, you will become less and less active. And when you transcend goodness, you will become completely inactive. So Prabhupada refutes that in the first sentence of the purport itself. So it is not a question of embodied life. What is the sentence? Can somebody, first sentence of the purport?
It is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active.
Yes. So now, Krishna is talking at one level, Prabhupada is taking it at a deeper level. Krishna is talking about a level of sarva prakriti jayir gunai, that the material body will force you to act. So Krishna is saying, it is not, Prabhupada is saying, it is not only that, yes, but it is the nature of the soul itself to be active. So how is that? Because some of us might have played in our school days the sack race. Sack race is if you put a sack around your legs and then you try to run. It's quite cumbersome and difficult to run. But then if you take the sack off, then it's much easier and faster to run. Or if somebody has a big burden on the back and he's told to run, he can't run very fast. But when the back burden is removed, he can run much faster. So he says, this body is like a sack or a burden for the conditions, for the soul. So, actually in the sack, even with the burden of the sack or the bag, or whatever you want to say, even with that burden, the soul is still active. So when that burden is removed, when that bondage is removed, how much more the soul will be active? So actually, of course, when this burden doesn't just slow down the soul, it also activates the soul, but in the wrong way. Passion activates the soul. But still the point is that where does the energy for activation come? It comes from the soul. The direction of activation will come by the condition of the conditioning of the body. That means the energy for activation comes from the soul. The soul is by nature active. But the direction of the activation, how will the soul be active? Will he be active in creating new things as in passion? Or will he be active in destroying things as in ignorance? Or will he be active at a more intellectual level in maintaining, analyzing and understanding as in goodness? That will be determined by the condition. But the energy of activation comes from the soul itself. And therefore, it's not possible to be inactive. This is a fundamental principle of bhakti. Generally speaking, people think spiritual life means that senses are very troublesome and we have to give up engagement of the senses. But it is not that the senses are troublesome, it is our enjoyment that is troublesome. And actually, the same senses, so actually, you know, there are two extremes. The karmis feel that senses should be used for sense gratification. And the jnanis feel, no, if you use senses for sense gratification, they will give bondage. So therefore, you should give up all sensory engagements. These are two extremes. Senses, so karma is, what is the idea of senses? Oh yes, just go out and enjoy. Use senses as much as you can. And the jnanis, give up all use of senses. Like a pendulum, two extremes. But both are impractical. Why? Because even if we want to enjoy, we can never enjoy as much as we want. Because our body puts a physical limitation on the enjoyment. And people want to enjoy their senses, whether it is by eating or mating or whatever. They can enjoy only up to limited capacity. And when people stop the material enjoyment, it is not because they are satisfied, but it is because their body's capacity to enjoy is exhausted. So, we cannot go in this direction unlimitedly of trying to enjoy. On the other hand, if we just deny the senses, it is impractical and it is torturous. Just don't do anything in the senses. It's torturous. So bhakti offers a middle way. Bhakti offers what can be called as sensory spirituality. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Rishikena. So sensory spirituality. That means we use our senses to gain spiritual experience. This is the essential message that Krishna will be giving to Arjuna later. But here he is telling this other extreme. That other extreme of renouncing all activity is not going to work. And then after telling that you cannot be inactive, Krishna continues the same theme in the next verse and says, what is going to happen to a person who is attached, who tries to become inactive? He describes in the next verse. Let us. Karmendriyani Sanyamya
Karmendriyani Sanyamya
Yasate Manasasmaran
Yasate Manasasmaran
Indriyathan Vimudhatma
Indriyathan Vimudhatma
Mithyacharasa Uchyate
Mithyacharasa Uchyate.
So, karma indriyani sanyamya. Sanyamya means restraint. So, in the this word sanyamya comes in 2.61 earlier. Tani sarvani sanyamya yukta asita mat paraha vashyehi asya indriyani tasya pragya patishtita. So, Vishnu Chakra Thakur, in the purport to that verse describes, sanyamya means control. And when do you need to control something? When there is some opposition. That means the senses have not yet become free from the controlling enjoyment mentality. Therefore, we need to control the senses. So he says this verse actually describes a three-step process. First, we control the senses, then yukta asita matpara, fix the senses on Krishna, and then by this, vashya means to conquer. So this verse actually describes from control to conquest. So now here Krishna is talking about not conquest but control. Karmendriyani sanyam. So one is controlling the senses of action. Yasate manasasmaran. The mind is still contemplating on sense objects. The mind has a tendency to return to those experiences which have given some pleasure. So it's natural for the mind to go to those experiences. And therefore, if one has experienced sense gratification, which practically everyone has in this material world, so it's natural for the mind to go back to those experiences. And one is restraining the senses, but the mind is kind of yasate manasasmara. And what is indriyarthan? Then indriyarthan, that is sense objects. Then what is such a person? Vimudhatma. He is fooling himself. And mithyachara, he's a hypocrite. He is cheating the world. He's cheating himself and he's cheating the world. Why? Because the essential principle of renunciation is not just keeping away from the sense objects, but essential principle of renunciation is purification. The purpose why we stay away from the sense objects is so that we can become purified. But we are physically staying away from the sense objects, but we are mentally very close to the sense objects. And there is no purification. In the 18th chapter, Arjuna begins with a question. He asks, what is the difference between tyaga and vairagya? So, Krishna explains that tyaga is physical distancing from the sense objects. Tyaga. I'll do tyaga of this. But vairagya means a lack of emotional involvement in the sense objects. Lack of emotional involvement in the sense objects. Just like, you know, somebody is very attached to smoking. They say, I give up smoking. He throws away the cigarette. He is antyag. But he is antyag, but still there is a lot of raag. Emotional involvement is there, isn't it? Yes, he sees somebody smoking. Oh, I should also smoke. So much emotions go along with that. But somebody has no attachment. Then even if he sees somebody smoking, there is no emotional involvement over there. There is only pity for the person who is burning his lung like that. So, actually what is required is not just the physical distance into the sense objects. What is required is the absence of emotional involvement in the sense objects. And that absence of emotional involvement comes not just by restraint, but by purification. When we become purified, then our emotions get involved in higher purpose. So our emotions get involved with Krishna. And when our emotions are involved with Krishna, then there is no emotional involvement with the sense objects. You know, Haridas Thakur, when he saw that prostitute, for the ordinary human being, there is a lot of emotional involvement with the prostitute. He thinks that, I will enjoy it. Now for Haridas Thakur, there is no emotional involvement at that level. But he was not a jnani. A prostitute is coming, let me run away from that. There is the emotional involvement at a higher level. This is also a soul who has forgotten Krishna. And let me deliver this soul. Now we should not try to get emotionally involved in that way. Because, you know, we will be dragged down at a lower level. But the point is that the lack of emotional involvement is what is important. And for one who is not yet detached, what happens? Emotional involvement is very there, very much there. And therefore, he is not going to get purified. He will still sense the sense objects, still he will get bound because the desires are still coming. And eventually, the desires will express themselves in an ugly way, ugly and regrettable way. So, therefore Krishna is telling, don't become a hypocrite by renouncing artificially. So, the next verse, we'll discuss this theme a little bit more after discussing the next verse. So then, after telling that one should not just give up the sense objects and try to starve the senses, Krishna says, better to engage the senses. That's the next verse he discusses. Yasva indriyani manasa.
Yasva indriyani manasa.
Niyam yarabhate
Arjuna.
Karmendriyai karma yogam.
Karmendriyai karma yogam.
Asaptah savishishyate.
Asaptah savishishyate.
Translation. Yasto indriyani manasa. So the previous verse said the senses are controlled, but the mind is uncontrolled. It's better, he says, use the senses, regulate the senses with the mind. Yasto indriyani manasa niyam yarabhate. So niyam is not the same as sanyam. Sanyam means restraint. Niyam means regulation. So in Krishna consciousness, do we practice sanyam or niyam? Yeah, actually, even to practice niyam, you need some sanyam. There is no doubt about it. But sanyam means basically control, whereas niyam means regulation. So niyam yarabhate Arjuna. Niyam means rule. Okay, do this in this much quantity. Niyam yarabhate Arjuna. Karmendriyai karma yogam. So use the karmendriyas for practicing karma yoga. And asaktah savishishyate. If one does savishishyate means he is better. One who is detached in this way. So, is this in general talking about Brahmacharya Ashram and Grahastha Ashram? Not exactly. Why? This is talking about Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And Krishna is preferring Karma Yoga over Jnana Yoga. And the important thing, even to practice this level of Karma Yoga is Asaktaha. Asaktaha is a Vishishyate. So, actually, a few months ago, and back to Godhead, we had a question asked by one of our readers. He said, you know, so many ISKCON devotees are becoming brahmacharis. But in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling Arjuna not to renounce his work. So why are you people not following the spirit of the Bhagavad Gita? Why are you disobeying Krishna and renouncing the world?
So, actually, first point is that Krishna was telling Arjuna not to renounce the world because primarily he was already a grihastha.
And a grihastha cannot be responsible. Somebody has taken a world responsibility, he cannot artificially renounce it. That's the first point. And the second point is not that Krishna is recommending grihastha ashram or discouraging brahmacharya ashram. Krishna is talking at a much higher level of bhakti. In fact, Krishna is not talking about brahmacharya ashram, Krishna is not talking about grihastha ashram. He is saying sarva dharman paritech. He says, give up brahmacharya ashram, give up grihastha ashram, everything. Sarva dharman paritech. The only thing you should follow is Mahamekam Sharanam. Just surrender unto me. So then, now some people get very confused. Sarva dharman paritech. How can you say you are called dharma? Is it telling you become sinful? I think last time I mentioned, this is the smartha brahmanas who have changed this words. You say, how can you be dharma? So they say, sarva dharman pratyaj. But no, when Krishna says sarva dharman pratyaj, it doesn't mean you become adharmic. That means, give up your normal ideas of what your dharma is. And then, adopt that dharma which will enable you to do mamekam sharanam praj. So yes, you may be a kshatriya, you may be born a kshatriya, you may be born a brahmana, born a vaishya. That's okay. In Kali Yuga, there is so much intermixing and confusion that the castes of birth don't have much meaning. So mamekam sharanam praj. You take surrender unto me, and whichever dharma enables you to surrender to me, accept that. So, for some people, the brahmachari dharma will be more conducive for surrender to Krishna. For some people, the grahastha dharma will be more conducive for surrender to Krishna. Anukulyasa sankalpa, pratikulyasa vachana. That is the defining criteria. What is favorable, we accept. What is unfavorable, we reject. So, even if somebody wants to be a grahastha, Krishna is telling here, what is the qualification required? Asalpa savishishyate. One has to be detached. Without detachment, if one enters into household life, you know, the house will hold on to a person for the rest of eternity practice. Isn't it? Because the attachment will be there. So asakta is very important. And that's why Vedic culture did not start with the option of grahastha or sannyasa. It started with the non-optional brahmacharya. Isn't it? See? Okay, grahastha or sannyasa are later options. You can choose. But brahmacharya is non-optional. It's something which everybody has to start. And brahmacharya doesn't mean just simply an unmarried person longing for lusty enjoyment. It's a person who is disciplined. So, brahmacharya ashram creates a training by which that asakta comes about. So, in that sense, you know, without proper brahmacharya training, one cannot be a proper grahastha also. So, in boys, to some extent, we get this brahmacharya training. So, Krishna is talking about a different level of discussion over here. He's talking about what is most favorable for one's spiritual advancement. And it is not a rigid rule that brahmacharya ashram is always favorable, nor is it a rigid rule that grahastha ashram is always favorable. We have to see according to individual situation, which is more favorable. So, of course, what Krishna is condemning over here is a show-bottle spiritualist, who is attached to material enjoyment, but who is making a show just so that he can earn a living. So, Prabhupada concludes this purport by a very classic statement. A sincere sweeper on the street. And read that.
Sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charitable meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living.
Yes, who meditates for what purpose? Not for attaining God, but for making a living. I said a charlatan. Charlatans are hypocrite. So, that means, see, there is mundane responsibility. There is adharma, aparadharma and paradharma. Adharma is irreligiosity or irresponsibility. Aparadharma is mundane responsibility. And paradharma is spiritual responsibility, spiritual dharma. So actually, if one renounces, one should renounce to go from aparadharma to paradharma. Yes. That means, you know, yes, I was taking care of my parents, I was taking care of my family members. And now I want to devote my life to Krishna. Then one has to become more responsible so that one takes up a higher responsibility of serving Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he describes our Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sannyas in that book, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings, his life and precepts. So there he says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, cut off the bonds of the family so as to accept the whole world as his family and to become a citizen of the whole world and work for the deliverance of the whole world. So it's actually taking up a higher responsibility. But unfortunately, many people, they, in order to evade responsibility, they go from here to here. They take sannyas, but actually they are going from aparadharma to adharma. And that is very unfortunate. So this is what Krishna is condemning over here. And that's what Prabhupada is saying. If somebody is meditating just for earning a living, then that is a charlatan meditator. A sincere sleeper on the street is much better. So the Vedic culture is not, there are a lot of external forms, rituals and structures in Vedic culture. Now, no other religion in the world has such a structured form of spirituality. Everybody, okay, you have to develop make spiritual advancement. How do you do that? The wonderful support structure available in the Vedic culture. Yes. Start off as a brahmachari, get some training, then take grahastha ashram, then gradually withdraw from material life, and take sannyas and fully deliver yourself. So, you know, you can have a very clear progression. See, actually, just like if somebody goes to school and you go to school or you go to college and you say, okay, what do you have to do? You have been in the glory for 15 years. But what do you have to do in 15 years? Well, you skip attending class. I say, if there is no preparation, there is no exam, there is no graduation, there is no degree, who will have the inspiration to attend? You know? You have to see some structure and some progression. So unfortunately for many people, spirituality means what? As for example, Christianity, spirituality begins with faith, it ends with faith. There is no structure for progression. Of course, individually, if Christians are sincere, they can make progress. But similarly, in Islam, you just have faith in Allah and follow Muhammad and destroy anyone who doesn't follow Muhammad. That's something which the fanatical mullahs will tell. But the point is, there's no structure. How do we know that we are actually making advancement? So Vedic culture offers a structure. That is a unique gift of Vedic culture. It offers a structure for our progressive spiritual advancement. But we also have to know that the structure itself does not constitute spiritual advancement. No, it is. So the external structure is a support system. It's like a map. It's like a compass for us to know where we have to go. But it's our internal spiritual advancement that is meant to be facilitated by this external structure. So some people say spirituality should not have any structures at all. Yes, that would be nice. But without this structure, there could not be any systematic propagation of spirituality. It's very good. So in Vedic culture, Brahmanas would not get involved in management and structures. Kshatriyas would. Kshatriyas had to do that. So because, you know, for a Brahmana, you know, he can just say, yes, today I memorize this verse. Today I have completed the memorization of this whole thing. He's satisfied. Kshatriya, memorization, what do you do after memorization? You have to do something practical. You have to go and you have to preach and you have to convert people, make them into devotees, you have to make some systems. So a Brahmana's self-satisfaction is good, but the self-satisfaction cannot lead to spiritual transformation of society. See, the typical mode of a Brahmana is, he will just sit, if somebody comes and asks him the questions, he will give answers. But he will not go around finding people. And when the culture of sadhus would travel around, you know, they would just go and sit. They will not do follow-up. Now, please come, I am giving a lecture now. Whoever comes and wants to hear, they will hear. And they would also, how the system of initiation would be, they will come, they will take initiation. But after initiation, they would not be sending any letters giving instructions or taking follow-up with the sadhana card. All that thing would not happen. Why? Because that is not a Brahmana's nature. That's why Prabhupada said, if ISKCON is to progress, we need Brahmanas with a Kshatriya spirit. Brahmanas with a Kshatriya spirit. So, a Kshatriya is very concerned with transforming the world. If he's a good Kshatriya, he wants to transform the world for the betterment of the world. If he's a bad Kshatriya, he wants to transform the world for the betterment of his own pocket. But we want to transform them. So that's why if we want to preach, we need Brahmanas with a Kshatriya spirit. So that's what the Bhagavad Gita talks about, that we have to work. Now Arjuna is being elevated with Brahminical knowledge, but he is a Kshatriya and he will have to fight and he will have to manage them. But he will not manage like a typical ignorant, passionate Kshatriya. He will manage as an enlightened, exemplary Kshatriya who is, to a large extent, situated in goodness. Now, Kshatriya is not just purely in passion, he is in goodness and passion. If you are only in passion, he will not be willing to submit to Brahmanas. Passion is submit to Brahmanas. You know, I have the power, I am doing the work, I will get things done. These people are doing nothing. But only when he has some goodness, then you understand this. Brahmanas are working at a higher level. So now, Arjuna, Krishna will conclude this section by telling Arjuna, now you do your work. Niyatam kuru karma tvam.
Niyatam kuru karma tvam.
Karma jayo ya karmana.
Karma jayo ya karmana.
Sharira yatra pichate.
Sharira yatra pichate.
Na prasiddheda karmana.
Na prasiddheda karmana.
Yes.
One cannot even maintain
one's
physical body without
trust. Yes. Yeah, so, now earlier Krishna talked about higher reason. What reason is that? Actually, you will not be able to purify yourself. You will not be able to make tangible spiritual advance. Now he talks about practical reason. You will not be able to maintain yourself also, Arjuna, if you don't work. So therefore, to maintain yourself, sharira yatra vichate, you should niyatam kuru karma. Do your prescribed duty of fighting. And then, Arjuna still have concerns that how, if I do my duty, I will not get bound. So now Arjuna has understood one point. Okay, if I become inactive, I will not get purified. But so that point Krishna has clarified. How Jnana Yoga will not lead to spiritual advancement. But still Arjuna has a residual doubt that if I become active, will I not get bound in karma? That Krishna will clarify in the next section. In 3.9 to 16, he talks about Karma Kanda, and from 16 onwards, he talks about, till almost 35, he talks about Karma Yoga. So the next verse is starting the section. So here, inaction is condemned. And now, next verse onwards, action will be analyzed. So we'll just recite this verse. This is the famous verse which Prabhupada would often quote. Yajñārthāt karmaṇo anyatra lokoyam karma bandhanah tad artham karma kaunteya mukta sanga samāchara. Here Krishna will tell the sutra. So actually this verse gives bhakti. Working with satisfaction of Vishnu is bhakti. Prabhupada quotes Yajna Vai Vishnu. Yajna is actually Vishnu. So he's not telling directly what does Yajna refer to. There are some nouns which are nondescript. For example, Brahman, Parameshwar, Paramatma. Now Parameshwar or Paramatma, this does not describe a particular person. Is it referring to Krishna? Or the demigod Vishnu? Is it referring to Shiva? It is referring to somebody else. So these are general nouns because they are designations. For example, for Prime Minister. Prime Minister doesn't tell us who is the Prime Minister. So Yajna is a word like that. But the Vedic literature only tell who is actually Yajna? Yajna Vishnu. So Yajnarthat Karmanonya. Therefore, work for the satisfaction of that absolute truth. That person who is embodied, who is manifested as sacrifice. Lokoyam karma bandhanah. Yes, ordinarily work will cause bondage. But if you work for the satisfaction of that Supreme Lord, then it will not cause bondage. That is the secret. So normally, inaction has been exposed as counterproductive. And now how action can lead to elevation will be analyzed in the subsequent verses. So are there any questions? Yes,
ma'am.
Yes.
Many times people argue that, like,
it's a very important question. The question is that the third verse of the third chapter is Karma Yoga. Prabhupada translated that as devotional service, Krishna consciousness. So, in fact, I have given a whole class on this. I'll explain this briefly. See, when Srila Prabhupada uses Bhagavad Gita commentary, he has one of the most difficult challenges for any author in world history. You know, in the history of no religious tradition, even no Vedic tradition, has the teacher to communicate his message to an audience which is so remote from the original audience. The original audience of the Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna. And through Arjuna, the people who are living Vedic culture, but the people for whom Prabhupada is writing are historically, geographically, religiously, culturally, linguistically, socially, completely different from the original audience. Historically, they have no understanding that there is River Swan and there is so many stories, they are completely different. Geographically, you know, Krishna talks about Kurukshetra, they don't know what Kurukshetra is. Linguistically, they don't understand Sanskrit. Culturally, Krishna talks about, you know, how women get polluted and Varanashram Dharma, they don't have any idea about Varanashram Dharma. Historically, culturally, linguistically, then philosophically, actually the Western religious tradition has no such funny understanding of body and soul and so Jesus' differences. So, you can go on. Almost Tamal Krishna Maharaj talks about seven things. So, I said historically, geographically, culturally, linguistically, philosophically, then socially, politically also. But the point is that Prabhupada has to bridge a huge gap in his purpose. So it's like the people are living at an animalistic level. Ahar, nidra, bhumaiti. So from animalistic level, the higher level is human level. From human level, higher is spiritual level. And from spiritual level is Vedic level. Because there are so many forms of spirituality. Vedic level. From Vedic level, because Vedas talk about so many things, there is Vaishnava level. And from Vaishnava level, there is Gaudiya Vaishnava level. So you know, Prabhupada has to give the Gaudiya Vaishnava essence to people who are at animal level. So you see how much elevation he has to do in his books? Animal to human to spiritual to Vedic to Vaishnava to Gaudiya Vaishnava. So it's a huge task to bridge in one book. Bhagavad Gita is going to be the most important book which Prabhupada has to. So, because Prabhupada has to elevate it to a great level, so Prabhupada does not in his purports go into technical details. Does not go into technical details. So therefore, if we say yes, technically speaking, what Krishna is telling there is karma yoga. It is not devotional service. It is not bhakti yoga. That is correct. But at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly rejects every term else and talks about only bhakti yoga. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraj. So now, and it is not that Krishna talks about bhakti only at the end of the Gita. He talks about it throughout. Although Bhagavad Gita bhakti is the concluding message Krishna wants to give, so compassionate that Krishna drops bhakti throughout the Gita. 2.67 Yukta Asita Matpara. In this chapter 3.30 Mai Sarvani Karmani Sanyasya Asita Matpara. So like that throughout, even in 6th chapter, which is actually Dhyan Yoga, Krishna talks about bhakti not just in 6.47 Yoginami Sarvesham Bandhati Antatma. Even 6.15, 6.30 Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra or 6.1 Matsamstam Adiyachati Yukta Asita Matpara. You look at the Bhagavad Gita, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about bhakti. Although bhakti may not be the explicit emphasis throughout the Gita. But it is talked about and Krishna is building up the whole Bhagavad Gita to deliver the punch. Bhakti is the best. Naham vedai na tapasa na dane na chaijaya. The 11th chapter Krishna says, not by Veda study, not by tapasya, not by any of the other means. Bhaktya tvananya shakya name yogita vachana. So, Krishna gives a conclusive message of the supremacy of bhakti, which conclusion he drops hints throughout the Gita also. Now, because Krishna wants, is compassionate, he gives the period at the end and he drops hints throughout. But the devotee is more resourceful than Krishna. So Prabhupada does not just drop hints, Prabhupada gives full purports. And because for most people, Ashtang Yoga, Jnana Yoga are imperfect. So now if somebody reads the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sukhe Udeshe Pratishthapta, Sarvatmana Mahatmana. So, you know, go to the jungle and sit in an upright posture and fix your attention on the tip of the nose. And that is Brahmacharya. And do not be fearful. So, Bhagavad Gita is interactive. Let me give it up. I can't do it. So Prabhupada in the purport says, yes, Krishna is telling this, but it is impractical for Kali Yuga, therefore one is not going to call it, one is trying to tell Krishna. Now somebody who is just an objective commentator may say, you know, this is too much. So now you are supposed to write a commentary, but you are not writing a commentary, you are cancelling the original words, and you are giving your own words, and your own expression. But Prabhupada is not cancelling, Prabhupada is fulfilling the ultimate purpose. So yes, technically speaking, we agree. That there are places where Krishna is only talking about karma yoga, whereas Prabhupada gives us bhakti yoga. But we have to see what is the ultimate conclusion Krishna is giving. And in what sense, if we see only the Veda part, you know, between karma yoga and bhakti yoga, there is Veda and there is Aveda. Because karma yoga, if it is done for the pleasure of Krishna, it is bhakti yoga only. Therefore, if we see only the Veda part, then we are not getting a complete understanding. There is also the Aveda part, where karma yoga, if it is done with the intention of pleasing Krishna, it is bhakti yoga only. So therefore, we understand Prabhupada's compassionate intention. And actually it is not only Prabhupada who is doing it, Prabhupada is simply following Narad Muni, who actually chastises Vyasadeva. He is telling Vyasadeva, he says, Jukup Siddham Karya. He says, you have done an abominable work by giving all these Vedic literature. So Bhavarattasya, because people are attached to sense of enjoyment, and they will take your name and they will enjoy fatigue glory. Therefore, just give it all up and just glorify your devotional service. So the whole Vedic system is compassionate in giving multi-level spirituality, but it can lead to confusion. And because it can possibly lead to confusion, Narada chastises Vyasadeva for giving it. And then he tells me the clear confusion. So Prabhupada follows that story of Narada Muni. And Krishna gives a summarization, as I said, and he gives a conclusion. So Prabhupada gives a conclusion throughout, following the compassionate spirit of Narada Muni. Okay? So thank you very much. श्रीमद् भगवद् गीता की श्री प्रभुपाद की गौर भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमा।